Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of September 2014. Happy birthday to Matt Bennett. It's his 40th, so I'll say happy birthday, Matt. We'll talk with him, by the way, a bit later in the program this afternoon about the cash grain market. We'll also talk today with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Cold weather is coming eventually, and it's going to feel a whole lot more like fall, which reminds me that fall is apple harvest season, and we'll take a quick visit today to an orchard outside of Monticello, Illinois. In fact, we'll talk with Ron Wolf, who is the proprietor of that particular orchard, his wife too, Hope, as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. September corn down 5.5 cents today, 335 3/4. The settlement price December there at 346.5. That's down 5.5 cents. In the March contract, 359.5, down 5 3/4. May futures 368 1/4, down 5.5 cents. And July corn at 375.5, down a nickel. December futures $3.92, 3 3/4 lower. Soy complex bean futures nearby September 16.5 cents lower, $10.64 1/4. The settlement price November at $10.03 1/4, down 16 3/4. In January beans at $10.10 3/4, down 16 3/4. March futures $10.18 1/2, 16.5 lower. July beans down 15 1/4 at $10.31 1/2, and November of next year at $10.19 1/2, down 11 3/4 for the day. Bean meal on the afternoon finished the nearby September $15.80 lower. The bean oil up 24 cents. Live cattle futures at 157.42 1/2 in the October were up $2. The December at 158.40, up 40 cents on the day. The nearby feeder cattle finished up at 223.77 1/2 in the September, $1.07 1/2 higher. October 222.32 1/2, up 55 cents on the day. Lean hogs on the afternoon at $102.97 1/2 in the October, up $1.87 1/2, but December down 55 at $92.55 for 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Today's programming is made possible in part by the Friends of WILL and by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, committed to helping clients achieve peace of mind in retirement through effective planning. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
The outside markets show us crude oil down $1.09 a barrel at $94.45. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.83 8/10. That's down 2 7/10 for the day. And gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price at $2.60 even. That's down 1 penny 9/10 on the afternoon. Natural gas trading $3.82 9/10 as it's finishing out the day at 1 penny 8/10 lower. And ethanol futures at $2.12 finished 1 nickel lower on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day is now at 17,057. That's down 16 points. Gold futures in New York at $1,267 or $2.25 lower. And the U.S. dollar index trading at 83.89, or rather at 83.84. That's up 0.95 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 89 degrees, a south wind at 14 miles an hour, gusting to 22. Tonight, partly cloudy and 71. Friday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Those all come in the afternoon after 1 central time. Partly sunny and a high of 87 degrees and Friday night, showers and thunderstorms. Cloudy, a low of 62. North wind then at 8 miles an hour with a chance of precipitation on Friday night, set at 60%. And Saturday, partly sunny skies for game day, 75 degrees and a north-northeast wind at 9 miles an hour, mostly clear Saturday night, and a low of 51 degrees. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Let's talk now with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, on this fourth day of September. Good afternoon to you, Dan. How are you today?
I'm doing fine, Todd.
And your weather is like what?
We're still running air conditioners and it's still humid, but you can tell fall is in the air. And, of course, our days are about the same length as what your days. We can definitely tell that the days are getting shorter down here.
Indeed, they're getting shorter, and they start to get shorter pretty quickly. It's getting dark, I don't know, by 8 o'clock at night here in our part of the world. And harvest is coming at us somewhat quickly, though I'm told that next week we'll have some rainfall, so those folks that are trying to get some early harvest started might not be able to manage that, not only here, but across a large part of the Midwest. I'm wondering, as you take a look at the nearby futures and think about where this marketplace might be headed, it's been a harsh week for corn. Many producers are disheartened about the price of corn and its move lower, thinking that we had already maybe trounced through the bottom end of this marketplace. Are you concerned at all?
Well, I think a couple things. There's 2 months out of the year where the market just, on a historical basis, just goes into a meltdown, and that's usually the month of July. That's a statistical month that if you would just close your eyes and sell on July 1st and bought it back on July 31st, that would probably be a winner 80 to 90% of the time, because we do have a short crop, roughly 1 in 5 years, and then that's when the market goes counter-seasonal or you have bad weather in July. The other one is if you do have a good crop on its way, it's kind of like sell September 1st, buy back sometime during the first week of October. September is a very strong month to the downside from a seasonal perspective, and it accelerates as you get into the last couple weeks of September, on into the first week or 10 days or so of October. And basically what that is harvest pressure. And I think what we saw here with the release of the FC Stone numbers is every top and bottom is usually made with a panic phase. And I have a feeling that the FC Stone numbers kind of started this so-called panic phase or realization phase that we have a tremendous big crop out there. And with the size of crop that's coming at us, there's just not enough demand around to put the brakes on it. Farmers don't have enough grain sold, so you still have that transfer of ownership from the farmer to the commercial to go through. So there's all that hedge pressure yet to be put into the marketplace. And we broke down into new lows for the year and for the decline, which was kind of holding for a while. So I think we're just in this seasonal phase now of the descent into a harvest low. Normally, beans do a good job of putting the low in during the first 10 days of October and then never really looking back. On average, though, December corn will put in an October low, maybe bounce a little bit, but then usually comes back and tests it again during December. And those are just averages, and this year definitely looks like it's a super above-average crop, at least the stuff that I'm reading on the wire service. Some of these yields are just through the roof, and so I think, you know, what we're seeing here is there's no frost in the forecast to really do much damage. There might be some in the far northern areas, but it does look like it's a green light now. And with all of the August rainfall that we're going to have, just a tremendous crop. I am getting some resistance from farmers that the bean crop may not be quite as big as what everybody wants to put it. But we'll have to, you know, we're not really going to know until the combines start rolling. And like you said, next week kind of looks a little rainy. Maybe the following week we're going to begin to start drying out a little bit. We could begin to see some, hear a lot more yield reports.
Can you talk a little bit about the basis in particular for soybeans? There still remains some really large overage. And beans just appear to be out of place or gone, one of the two. And producers might find that of interest, but it may not help them very much, I would assume, in marketing the next year's crop.
No, it's going to be a day-to-day basis. And basically what the basis is telling you is that we are down at pipeline inventories in soybeans. And the soybean harvest is getting off to a much slower than expected start. And that's the same way with corn. A lot of your exporters and processors were planning on getting their hands on some of this Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana inventory that was harvested, that usually is harvested early. It's been delayed for a couple weeks or so, and that is why you're seeing a very strong spot basis levels. I mean, we've heard reports of processing plants cutting hours. There's a lot of empty rail cars sitting down in the southern Delta area waiting for that corn harvest and bean harvest to come forward and fill up to move north. So what we're seeing here is that normally at this time of year, we would have a lot of harvest activity taking place in the Ohio River Valley and further south, but the rain activity has just kept everything greener and wetter than average, and that's, we're off to a much slower early harvest, and that's what that basis level is telling you.
Any final word for the producers before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about this in Commodity Week this weekend, but things are awful bearish. There is still some downside price vulnerability in this marketplace if the crop turns out to be as big as what some of these private estimates are. But I guess, you know, I want to be hopeful that the lower prices will stimulate demand and that we will find some form of stabilization here not too far down the road.
All right. I'll talk to you in about half an hour to record Commodity Week.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And yes, we are going to record Commodity Week this afternoon at about 2:45. Hopefully it'll be up on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org in that 4 o'clock area for a couple of reasons. One, because I like to do it that way. I think it's a better show. And hopefully you do too. So I'll have Dan along with Matt Bennett, Alan Dearden, and Angie McGuire as our special guests this week on Commodity Week up on the website by about 4 o'clock, recording at 2:45 this afternoon, in large part because tomorrow I am headed to Purdue University to host Agronomy Day at the Beck Agricultural Center. That starts at 7:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 6:30 in the Central Time Zone. If you have not RSVP'd for the breakfast, you can still show up at 7:30, but please do have eaten already. Should be a great morning, Agronomy Day there on the Purdue University campus. I'm really looking forward to going over and taking part in it. Agronomy Day at the Beck Agricultural Center starts at 7:30 Eastern Time, just outside of West Lafayette, Indiana. That's on Route 52. Tonight, I will be right here in Champaign County in Mahomet. That's my hometown, but I'll be there at the Farm Credit Illinois building at 6 o'clock. And if you have RSVP'd, and I'm told we have about 120 already signed up for the meal, go ahead and come. If you didn't RSVP for the meal, show up a little bit late, have eaten already. We'll talk about ARC and PLC with Jonathan Kappas. Ellen Dearden will be there too. And so will, from Risk Management Commodities, Jason Clapp. That's tonight at 6 o'clock in Mahomet at Farm Credit, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Coming up next, backyard industry. We look into our archives for a story from October of 2010. You know, the typical grocery store stocks about half a dozen varieties of apple, not on a regular basis, but there are a whole bunch of others out there growing, especially across East Central Illinois, including some at Wolf Orchard in Monticello. Lisa Braltz took a ride there to take a look and a taste.
At some point, I fantasized about having an orchard, about living on acres and growing all this fruit. When I took a field trip to an orchard I'd heard about in Monticello, Illinois, I'd envisioned acre upon acre of apple trees. You know, an orchard. When I got there, I discovered that Wolf Orchard had just a couple of acres in apples. But they were heirloom apples, 68 varieties of them, apples most of us have never even heard of. Apples whose color and prolificness defied description. There were thousands of apples on these trees. Thousands. Once again, even though I automatically championed small for myself, I found myself thinking way too big where others were concerned. Ron and Hope Wolf are doing just fine, thank you.
I think Ron decided he would like to grow a few apple trees or a few fruit trees just as a hobby after he retired. And that was the business plan. And a few fruit trees grew into a lot of fruit trees and more varieties. And it is just an interesting project and an interesting hobby.
Then we had a lot of fruit, and we didn't know what to do with all this fruit. First, we started selling out of our garage just by word of mouth, some people that we knew. And then we went getting bigger and bigger. We built the shed, and we just expanded, and it just grew.
The recent interest in getting food from local sources has given them about all the business they can handle, says Hope.
Well, you know, when we first began, we noticed that our population of customer was the older customers that had heard of these and had these type apples, these heirloom apples, when they were growing up or on their farms or in their backyards. So that was the beginning of the attraction. And then, by word of mouth mostly, it was the varieties that brought a lot of people in. And then the fact that they can taste of these apples and get a little bit of a history of each apple when they come to visit. And the kids are the ones that have the most fun. They will taste everything.
They've planted every tree themselves and have tasted every apple. Hope's a whiz at telling you which apples are best in a pie. You have to have a mix of sweet and tart to get the best flavor. And tasting these apples is a revelation. Where else in town is one able to eat a couple of apples worth of slices from apples named Northern Spy or Winter Banana or Smokehouse? I know, apples are apples, right? But they're not. These apples all look, smell, and taste different. They have seasons. What was ready in August is done by October, but another apple comes in to take its place. Basically, it was driven home that we're completely missing out if we only eat the 5 to 8 varieties of apple available in a traditional supermarket. And the more of those apples we eat, the less likely it is that the heirloom varieties will survive. It's partially why Ron and Hope have spent their retirement growing apples. Do yourself a favor and grab an apple from someplace besides the grocery store. Make a pie or an apple cake with caramel sauce or Hope's suggestion, fried apples. Revel in apple season. It only comes once a year.
Well, that story from Lisa Braltz, she produced it about 4 years ago, and that piqued my interest because I wanted to know what had happened in that time frame at the Wolf Orchard there in Monticello with Ron and Hope. So, frankly, I called them about an hour ago and had a little discussion with Ron about his farm and the orchard, how he got started, and why he got started.
Well, I always liked apples. I was born and raised on a farm. My dad raised apples. My grandfather raised apples. My grandfather was a salesman for Stark Brothers Nursery at one time, and I've just always been interested in apples, to tell you the truth.
So you evidently had a taste for what we now today call heirloom apples, apples that generally aren't grown in larger orchards, I would think. How many varieties and do you have on the farm?
Well, right now, in total, I think heirloom and modern varieties, I think we have around 65 different varieties planted.
Here on this fourth day of September, what do you have that is being harvested today? Anything?
Yeah, we've got about 4 or 5 varieties. We've got the Galas, we've got the Macintosh, we've got some Jonathans, we've got some Honeycrisp, we've got a few Crow Eggs, some Rusty Sweets, That's about it right now. Of course, you know, things change weekly as they get ripe.
Your farm is open. And when is it open, and what do people, when they come, what can they do there?
Well, we're open every day but Monday from noon till 6. And when you come here, you come for apples. We have no entertainment. We're not an agritainment site. We pick the apples. We set them out in boxes on our display case, and we give you a bag, and you can go around and pick out what you want and fill your bag up.
And you tell people about the varieties and what they're good for, and the differences between all these types of apples?
Well, if my wife is out there, she's in the sales room, she likes to give everybody a taste of the apples and give them a brief history and answer any questions that they have about what apple to use for what, and et cetera, and so forth.
How do you get to the farm, Ron?
Well, we're a mile and a half east of Monticello, half mile north of the Monticello Road, right on top of the Cerro Gordo Moraine. When you go into Monticello, there's a ridge that you go over, going into Monticello from the east. And we're right on top of that ridge, right there. Where you turn there, there's a church called Crossroads Church. You turn right in that road there. And we have a sign out on the south side of the road out there that says Wolf Orchard, Arrow Point North.
That's Ron Wolf of Wolf Orchard. One of the great joys of fall are the apples. And heck, I think you ought to find an orchard near you, if not the Wolf Orchard, another one, and go visit it. And take a great big bite out of what's good for the harvest season. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Let's turn our attention now to the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is on the phone line from TGM and the Elevator in Windsor, Illinois. He works for Channel Seeds as their grain market specialist. Matt, thanks for being with us this afternoon. I want to take up soybeans with you really quickly, because we've had a drop in the marketplace in the beans, but I don't know that you wouldn't be convinced you shouldn't still sell soybeans. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call not to. I mean, with some of these yields that are getting thrown around, and obviously most in the Midwest, most in the Corn Belt, people who've grown soybeans have gotten a really good weather pattern to finish the crop off. So it'd be a tough sell maybe to say that the bean crop's getting smaller at this point.
Mm-hmm. So above $10, you still think it might be a sale earlier rather than later?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. And I think as you get under $10, if a guy is really comfortable with his production, I don't see any reason why I would back away from selling some beans, because they could get quite a bit cheaper yet.
All right. And do you have bids for the day there?
Yeah, you know, for corn, we're looking at 340 for right now, and then for fall, 312. And then for beans, as far as a quick ship goes, 1170. And then for fall, you'd be looking at about 974.
All right. Hey, happy birthday, by the way.
Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. That, of course, is Matt Bennett from TGM and from Channel Seeds. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Back in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
It's National Macadamia Nut Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1783, Frederick Tudor was born. An American businessman long before refrigeration, he was among the first to create an export trade in block ice, harvested from frozen freshwater ponds in New England in the winter. The ice was shipped to India, Europe, and the Caribbean. In 1801, Colin Whipple was born. An American inventor and machinist, he patented the first practical screw machine in the U.S. for making pointed screws. Early screws had blunt ends, making it necessary to drill a starter hole. He also invented and patented seven other machines for improving the manufacture of screws. In 1885, the Exchange Buffet opened, the first self-service restaurant. In 1888, George Eastman was issued a landmark U.S. patent for his box camera. On the same date, he registered the trademark name Kodak. The camera used a fixed-focus lens fast enough to take practically instantaneous exposures and held enough film for 100 pictures. And in 1917, Irving Colburn died, an American inventor. His process for fabricating continuous sheets of flat glass made mass production of glass for windows possible. Colburn went bankrupt before the technology was perfected, and he was bought out by the Toledo Glass Company, who hired him on to finalize the technology. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, on the phone line to talk about the forecast. Mike, thanks for being with us. We had a little rain here this morning, and I suspect it is the beginning of maybe some more showers over the next several days. Do we get it, and how about the rest of the Midwest?
We'll certainly see some showers and thunderstorms across the Corn Belt over the next couple of days, and like you noted, we are seeing some of those right now. But as we go through the weekend and into early next week, it does dry out a bit. We won't see very much in the way of rainfall at all from Saturday through Sunday across the Corn Belt, and so that'll be a bit of a drier pattern there. But the one thing we're watching is that next week we see a pretty large warm-up for the first half of next week, and that eventually results in significant rainfall for a large portion of the central U.S., including most corn and soybean areas. And what that means for agriculture is that a fast start to harvesting is pretty unlikely at this point, not so much because of the rain we have now. It's a little too early for widespread harvesting to begin, but more so because of the rain next week. Right about when things might turn favorable for harvesting, we'll see a pretty significant rain event. So that's kind of what we're watching for the next 7 days.
So warmer weather, but I think I've been hearing more than whispers about colder weather later on. What do you see there?
There's a high probability for a large cool snap to develop later next week and more so into next weekend. More than likely, we'll end up seeing our first frost of the year across the northern plains and really across the Canada prairies. That said, temperatures need to get below 32 degrees for around 4 hours to induce damage, and really, we'd like to see those temperatures even colder than that, 28 degrees or colder. We think temperatures will drop into the low and mid-30s across much of Montana, the Dakotas, and into central and northern Minnesota. But that, although not ideal, should not be enough to derail an entire corn or soybean crop. So that's something to watch. We're trying not to get too excited about it because it is the middle of September next week, and it does look like a minor event, not a major widespread killing event like we saw in 1974 or 1995.
So a slow start to the season, a little cold weather, but not terribly dangerous. Anything else that we need to talk about? I think maybe the Climate Prediction Center has been busy on this Thursday.
They have. Every month they release an El Nino or a La Nina outlook, depending on what's taking place, and that happened earlier today. They're forecasting the odds for an El Nino event to develop later this year at 60% to 65%, the most important piece of the El Nino puzzle, in our opinion, is that the El Nino, if it were to develop, would be weak. When you have a weak El Nino, your correlations to weather across the U.S. and across the world diminish markedly. And because of that, even if a weak El Nino were to develop later this year, we would not be able to form real strong weather expectations based on that information.
That's That's, of course, Mike Tenor.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.